And we'll do it right after our hike.
First.
Nothing.
Anyone have any questions on the physiology of brain or the Gemara in Yuma? I'll just actually just review it quickly. Yuma, I am giving back the test for
you. Retention.
In Yuma, we learned that basically the following the two ways of looking at that sugya, which on the face of it seems to be lending strong support to the shita that the definition of death in halacha really relates to breathing, right? Because the Gemara discusses, again, the case where a building fell down on somebody, it's on Shabbos or Yom Tov, and we have to decide how far we can go with Chilul Shabbos. You're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, but you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for a mace. The body's dead already, it's too late. So the Gemara gets into this idea of Hechon Ad Hechon Voldik. How far do you search that you'll know definitively, Al Pidin, this person's dead, and therefore you have to stop searching, you can no longer be Mechal Shabbos. So we saw that there's a machlokas, where the Gemara sets up a machlokas between whether it's at the nose representing respiration or at the chest, at the heart representing circulation. So if somebody wants to take a very superficial reading of the Gemara, they can say it's all about defining death. Is death defined as cessation of breathing, or is death defined as cessation of circulation? And the maskana we see that there are psukim brought in that seem to support breathing, that the ruach hachayim is in the nefesh, is in the af, in the nose. And one would possibly erroneously assume that it's telling me that in the competition between circulation and breathing, breathing wins, despite the fact that circulation could continue. So we saw that gets to be a very complicated way of reading the Gemara, because if you look at the details of the Gemara then tells me the statement of Rav Papa. Rav Papa really begins to open up the sugya a little bit. Because Rav Papa says, you know, this whole machlokas about whether it's circulation or respiration, whether it's lave or af, that's only if you're going from the bottom up. But if you're coming from the top down, then everybody would agree that you stop at the nose. So right away that tells you this was not just a debate between whether it's circulation, bafka, or respiration, bafka. It couldn't be that. What else could it be? So Poshup Shad and Rashi is the sukkah really works out like this. The sukkah is really asking, when you have to decide if somebody's alive or dead, what's your most secure indicator that the person's really dead? So it sounds like either one alone would have been enough, by the way, right? If I knew for sure the heart wasn't beating, or if I knew for sure the person wasn't breathing, everybody would agree you're dead. Why is that? Is that taking a stand on this issue? Not at all, because the reality of those times was, if either one was out, the other one was going to be out within a very, very short period of time. So practically speaking, that's the problem with this whole sugya. You can't really assume anything about the heart still beating while I'm not breathing, and therefore that's okay to declare that's dead, which some people want to say. But I don't think it's possible to do that, because the physical reality, the historical reality, is that you never really could separate those two things. That's why it was never an issue. For centuries, no one talked about this sugya. No one cared. Because when you stop breathing, your heart stops very quickly after. If your heart stops, you stop breathing. They never were separable. It's only bismaneinu, with a ventilator, that you could do it. With a ventilator, you could keep somebody artificially respirating, even though in reality they can't breathe. And that way you maintain circulation. It's a contemporary issue. It could never have been born out of this sugya. So Pashup Shad, Rashi's telling me, is that really, it's just a question of where's the more sensitive indicator that I can rely on that the person's dead. So if I'm coming from the feet up, so I get to the heart, so one side says, you know, if you don't hear a heartbeat in that very primitive method of auscultation, which means you're using your ear, so one side actually says that's enough. And the other side says, no, you better keep going, it's not reliable, go up to the nose. Because breathing is the only reliable way of determining that. Has nothing to do with defining, right? Everyone sees that? That's very, very critical. That this is a questionable right. The only The only tzad to say that this Gemara is telling me something, which is going to be taken by the Israeli chief rabbinate, and by Dr. Steinberg, and by some in this room, is they are evoking a pasuk. So that's a tough thing to defend. If they're bringing in a pasuk to make their point, it's hard to say, but not impossible, that it's declaring a physical reality. In other words, like I'm telling you, the most sensitive indicator is the nose. How do I know that? So I would have said, because, you know, experience tells me that the most sensitive indicator that really tells me a person's dead is breathing. It's not reliable from the heart. No, but bringing in a pasuk, I admit, that's a little shaky to go with that sheet. So that's their biggest plus. The side that wants to say that this Gemara is really defining death, they say, look, it's a Zeres HaKasuk. They're bringing in the pasuk, and that's a compelling point independently. It goes against Rashi, and it goes against the rest of the Sugya. All right. So now turn to page... So if you look at the Gemara, do you have the header?
I don't have it.
They keep quoting that when they say that the reliable parameter is the nose. So that I admit, it's a very weakness to what the way I'm learning the Gemara. I've always been bothered by it. What I said was, you have to look at it as a sort of asmachta, remez, just a loose support they're giving, but what they really are telling you that it's not a good thing to give. Because the experience tells us it's not.
So the whole thing at the end of the day is that Rashi is trying to say, we're trying to find whatever is the most reliable source. So in terms of that, you're saying that no matter from where you're coming,
not the
defining, you should look until you reach the nose.
Right, because in other words, you can make a mistake. If you rely on the chest,
it could be really
you're going to listen with your ear over the guy's chest. You know, when a person, you'll never see this. In real life.
You can't put the hand on it and see if there's an heartbeat.
It's not going to be reliable at all. But when I've unfortunately been involved in these kind of situations many times. Meaning, you're in an ICU,
right.
Post-operative patients who've had open heart surgery. Mm-hmm. Things happen all the time, right? So taking care of 20 patients who, within 3 days, had some kind of open heart surgery, somebody's going to get into trouble, right? Somebody invariably does. And trouble means, let's say that they go and have an arrest. So you want to determine when somebody's arresting if you're going to do CPR or not do CPR. So how do you tell? In real life, what do we do? So you have the advantages of invasive monitoring, right? But let's say you did it. Let's say it's a patient, right? Sometimes this is what happens. A patient comes in, and a very enthusiastic surgeon who wants to show how good he is has them extubated in the OR, meaning tubes out, doesn't put in the proper monitoring tubes and wires, sort of a bravado, right? Doesn't happen in my institution, but this kind of scenario is where you can't rely on the invasive monitoring, you gotta rely on your own physical parameters. Is this person arrested, right? Now there's a difference between they're dropping their blood pressure a little.
So what is it?
They're dropping their blood pressure a little and they'll come up, give them a little fluid or something like that. Or no, this person is going to cardiac arrest, which means their heart rate is dropping or it's not even existent. So is there a pulse? That's the main thing, is there a pulse? So the last thing that we would do is try to listen to their heart with our ears or even our stethoscopes. You can miss it so easily. The heart can be beating in such a way, right? And it's going at the proper rate, but it's a very weak, contraction. You won't hear it. You'll miss it completely. The person's totally alive. It's not an arrest.
Not a rare situation.
Right. So, the Gemara is already even dealing without any invasive monitoring, and they're going to determine if someone's alive by listening to their chest. So to me, the Hanumim was ridiculous, And the Maskana and the Gemara agreed. Why they bring in the Pasuk? Again, they didn't need to bring in that Pasuk to conclude the way they concluded in this Sugya. But it gives it a little oomph. Why I feel comfortable saying that is because I could have brought in another pasuk that would have put it back into the hands of circulation. Ki adamu anefesh. What did I write there? Kiadamu nefesh, that tells me that that's where the nefesh is in the circulation. Right? Same kind of pasuk. So there's nothing muchrach in the Torah that defines death. That's the bottom line. Otherwise, we're going to have this whole debate.
So breathing is really very relevant.
So in terms of sensitivity, you'll do much better with primitive access, going by breathing, take a feather, take a burr. See, because breathing can be very shallow too, and you're missing it, right? It's very hard to tell. So you look at a little baby, this is what I always tell my patients. They're having trouble. Again, is the kid in heart failure now? So one of the signs of heart failure is breathing fast. So I don't know, is the kid breathing fast? Is he tummy? I said, you know what a typical normal newborn should look like, right? You should, when they're sleeping, you should be worried, are they breathing? Because it's very hard to see. If you ever, anyone who has a little baby at home, not yet, but you can say, go see, or take a look. A good, healthy baby that's sleeping at home, when they're having no respiratory distress, usually you'll have to look hard to make sure you see the respirations. So that's a good, healthy baby, let alone somebody who's ill.
So if you can really see it, notice it,
right?
That's
so sometimes you're going to have to rely on other monitors. So we'll look at carbon dioxide. We're going to do it the real way, right? Apnea test. But what they used to do, the apnea test of the Gemara, was a mirror. Was there any kind of mist that comes out on the mirror? So even if it's a very shallow breathing that I can't see it in the chest. So as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, the Yerushalmi on this Gemara does not bring, this is a very interesting point, the Yerushalmi, when it discusses this Mapolet and the guys underneath, so they don't say it's a machlokes between Libo and Apa. They say Tiburu and Apa. Does anyone know what Tiburu means?
Belly button.
Huh?
Belly button.
Yes. So what's that? What's the machlokes in Yerushalmi? It doesn't say Libo. Wherever it says Libo in our sugya, it says Tibura. It says, right, there it's really almost the worst. You know what? The whole Shaila is, where is the most sensitive indicator of breathing? Now, I'm bringing it as a raya that the concern of the Gemara was just finding the most sensitive indicator. Dr. Steinberg is going to bring the Yerushalmi to see, look, he says, look, see, that's, the Yerushalmi is telling you the only thing that counts is breathing, right? And therefore, if you're not breathing, you're dead, no matter what your heart is doing. Doesn't prove it to me. We'll see inside in a moment, Dr. Steinberg. We have his what? We don't have the Yerushalmi. If you look it up, it's in Yuma, in the same parent.
Because that one, Akash, is very well be interpreted as an oxygen that's in the blood. Because without the oxygen, the blood is worthless. And oxygen should be the breathing.
Hashem Shalom Kiyah Damu Nefesh is an emphasis on the Dam.
Oh yeah, what is it saying?
So much so, so much so that there are, as a matter of fact, if Shech Shlita builds his Shita, we'll see. He builds a Shita because it's not just one pasuk of Damu Nefesh. There's several riots. That Rav Shechter is going to build a Shita all around circulation, and in the end he's going to say, "I'm a Sukkah." What is it? And his real psak lemaisa, Rav Shechter is. We don't know, maybe brain death yes, maybe brain death no. It's a suffix, suffix chumr, we don't do it zich. But his own shita, when he wants to develop his own little shita, I shouldn't say his little shita, he's not respectful. His shita is to work with Damu Nefesh. I'll show you, we're going to see it in something.
But again, what about Damu Nefesh?
Another, I was just showing you an example that the pasuk doesn't prove anything.
And in addition to that, if you just think about the suffix, then you can always say if the suffix is gone, you have a choice. Either the person is suffix.
No, because we're dealing, there's no choice when it's the option is ritzicha.
No, it's a suffix gone. You either might die.
You are, it's better to allow someone the shen al tasa to die than to actively suffix someone.
Than to actively suffix someone.
Correct.
Something
because of well, meaning like I don't know if the guy's brain dead is real death or not. I can't actively go and kill him just because I'll say there's a doubt about that, but that guy's gonna definitely die.
Right,
still would not allow
him. My is that he the patient that's dying, right? He has a choice to make to say that if there's a risk of dying, I still want to try to save someone else's life.
You mean to sacrifice his life? No.
Yeah.
You can't. You still can't do that. You really can't. We're not balim on our own goof to give it up. You can't commit suicide. You can for the cloud. There'll be exceptions.
You don't know if it's going to be suicide. What is it? It's a guy who's standing in front of a, you know, a bus is going to...
You're only...
You
not
jump
a,
to save...
Badai Sakana. It's not a badai that is not
dead.
You're going
to be hit by the bus. What happened?
It's a badai Sakana. If he's alive, this is a badai Sakana.
Like
it's not a badai Sakana. It's a badai Ritzicha. But all right, hold up. When we get to the next week, let's get more information, and then we'll get to the case. All right. Everybody who has a hand up, page 10.
Ask him.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Whatever. We just wanted to quickly go through this second sukkah. So, yeah. And then we're going to go through Rabbi Tendler, Rabbi Bleich, Dr. Starnberg, and hopefully we'll go through the major postkin. Yeah. Rav Soloveitchik, you're not gonna get a legitimate take on which Rav Soloveitchik? Aaron Soloveitchik?
No.
That you'll get.
Rav Yosef.
No, I mean this hearsay as to which way he went on this. But no, you're not gonna do it.
Okay.
You don't have him on this. And he really was
wouldn't this be something that he would have been?
I would imagine he would have gone, it's just speculation, but I would imagine that he would have gone like his brother, or, let's say like Rav Shachter, at the end of the day. Wouldn't surprise me, Rav Shachter never quoted the Rav, which is more indication that he doesn't have a psak on this, because Rav Shachter would have quoted the Rav, the Rav had a clear psak. But, I shouldn't even say what I said. I don't know. I have no idea. Okay. Page 10. Page 10 is that other sukkah. So there's the Gemara and Yuma. There's really two main sukkahs. Yuma, Olos. Olos, it says that Adam Einu Matame Achitetze Nafsho, right? This is a great setup for defining death. Because now we're getting to the moment of death. This isn't just we're looking for an indicator. We're looking for a situation that is clearly, unequivocally dead. So we got one. Hutsu Rashehem. Afa Pisha Mefarchasim. It's made that if you cut off the head, even though there's going to be some kind of spasmodic movements that are left, Mefarchasim, that's what that means. Person is Matame, which means he's dead. The Rambam on that Mishnah says that very important point that Rabbi Tendler emphasizes over and over again. Why is this the definition of death? Because there's decentralization of movement.
No,
in other words, movements that are not controlled centrally by the person don't count, right? It's the disassociation of the body from the control of the central nervous system. That is the definition of death, according to Tendler's take on this Perusha Mishnah of the Rambam. And the Rambam is centuries ahead of himself in making this point, right? He's telling you that that's what it's all about, right? And if you understand the Hebrew, it's really an incredible thing to read the Rambam, because he's really saying this. Kasher lo yiyah hakoach hamis noah mitpashet bichlal ha'ivarim, when the power of movement that is dispersed throughout all the organs, mishoresh v'haschala achaz, when it's not coming from a single source, from a single origin, but it's rather scattered independently throughout the body, that is just mefarchasim, that's just spasmodic motions, movements, and it's not life. Life is when there's central control. So then there's one other sugi that's related to this, I just want to make this point, we didn't make it last time, is the Gemara and Chulin over there. The Gemara over there is getting into this a little more. And take a look at, this is a point Rabbi Bleich and Rabbi Tendler also battle over. I want to read the Gemara with you. If you look at Chaf Aleph, Amar, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, right, they're talking about also when is Tumah occurring, when is Tumah meaning death. So Nishpira Mafreches Verov Basar Ima. When the neck is broken, when the spine is broken, the spinal cord is broken, and Rov Basar Ima. What does that mean? And along with the breaking of the spinal cord, most of the basar, most of the flesh around there is also broken. That's the definition.
Who is this?
So this is the Gemara. So it comes.
What does that mean?
What
does that mean?
They're defining Hutaz Rosha, right? In effect, what's going on? This Gemara gets into what's Hutaz Rosha mean? So they're saying it means broken spine. And Rov Basar Ima. So comes along Rabbi Bleich. And Rabbi Bleich says, let me just read a little more in the Gemara. The im tomar oso masa de eli. And if you'll question what I just told you, that the definition of utas rosho is this breaking of the neck and robuster ima. If you're going to question masa de eli, what's masa de eli? I think we mentioned it. What happened with Eli? Who knows who Eli was?
He was
Right.
We heard that the Aaron was taken.
Right. Famous story, right? His sons are gone.
And the Aaron taken.
Not so upset.
Right.
His sons were not so good. Right? They were famous Mishan. They did a lot of bad things in terms of korbanos, etc. But then he hears the Aaron. What happens to him? He falls back over, breaks his neck, dies. So the Gemara says, but that wasn't Rov Basar Ima. Right? It says, the im tomar oso masa de eli mefareches velo robaser havi zekena shani. So where it says, well, that's different. Even though normally in a young, healthy person, you need to have utas rosho and robaser ima, but Eli was already an old man, so he was just broken neck was enough. That's the Gemara. Comes along Rabbi Blaya. And Rabbi Blaya says, you see, if you were right, Rabbi Tendler, and all we needed was physiological decapitation, meaning just that the brain is disassociating neurologically with the rest of the body, what do we need? Robuster, which is defined as simon, right? You need the trachea, you need the esophagus for some reason, right? The simonim of kashas, right? All those things also, or there's one sheet that says robuster means the musculature of the neck, right? Maybe it's supporting the spinal column, that's what it would really kill the person. They'll break their spinal, the bone of their spine. But if they still have some supporting structures, the spinal cord can remain intact. But robuster, maybe that means that. Whatever it is, Rabbi Black says, you see, Rabbi Tendler, there's more to it than the spinal cord itself. I have a raya promise that you're wrong. So what would Rabbi Tendler answer? What would you answer? What's your response? Why does Rabbi Tendler still get to say something from this silly?
Because...
what about Eli? Right? Eli didn't have robuster. He had nothing else. All he had was broken neck. So that's how they have a standoff on this sugya. No one's like giving in. Each one thinks it's a riot for their side.
What is robuster?
Robuster is a several sheep is what it means. It either means the majority of the trachea in the esophagus, or it might mean one of them, or it might mean the rope of the musculature, the structural support for the neck.
How does it
support the mind? Because
yeah,
he would say, in his own words, I think the words he used, if the real definition of death were simply neurological disconnect, physiological decapitation, which means that if the spine is severed, that's all you need, then it is completely nonsensical, that word you need, to include anything else as necessary in the definition.
I was trying to see how this is.
You see what I mean? That's a very cynical remark I just made. Hopefully you won't get it. It's been hacked to become cynical.
Wait,
I'm a little cynical on that question because
I like that.
Somebody seemed to change their mind. We'll see. It all goes back to a child I had to deal with. That
what about for Rabbi Tendler when he said that there's liquidation of the...
That's what he's asking me to get to.
We're
going to look at Rabbi Tendler inside. I just want to give you the Makoris fresh without any bias. Right? There's only one last bit of Makoris. Page 11, Machasim Sofer. And this we're going to just immediately dismiss because everybody claims Machasim Sofer is on their side. Everybody. Why is that? Because if you look at the Chasim Sofer in paragraph on the right, the second paragraph on the right, he seems to say, all we have left is the definition of death according to Chazal, and what is that? Breathing. And then if you look on the left, he says, so that's what Dr. Steinberg quotes, Rabbi Nun quotes, they quote this part of the Chasim Sofer. Then you go to the next side, and the Chasim Sofer threw in something. Haval kol she'ich she'mutal ke'eben domen, the ein bo shum defika. Everything that is completely still and there's nothing. What's a defika? There's no like pulse almost. That's what the English translation would be. discernible in the body. And then acharkach we see batel in the shima, and then we determine he's not breathing, then you're dead. So what do we see here in the Chasam Sofer? Both opinions. So the Chasam Sofer is really not going to be a valid raya.
Well, is that all the opinions?
If it doesn't stop them from bringing him forward. Right?
Is that all the opinions?
To me, it's a raya of anything for the other side. Because he didn't have to throw that in. But Dr. Starnberg deals with this. We'll see how he deals with it. He deals with it and says, oh, yeah, it's important to say there. He's just throwing that in, that would also be there, but it wasn't necessary for the definition of death. All you really needed was the Neshima. If it's in this sequence, you see what the Chasam Sofer is telling you? The fact that there's no heartbeat's not enough. You got to wait till the guy's not breathing or something like that.
Yeah, that's an important. That's the thing we brought before
the Fionni is an idea. It's very important.
We saw the Gemara from the
Chasam Sofer is telling you, he's imagining a scenario where a person's heart's not beating but they're breathing. Can you imagine such a scenario? I can't imagine. I've never seen it unless they're on a ventilator and they're dead, but the thing is like blowing them up like a balloon. That I've seen. Ugh. But in real life, without a ventilator, if your heart's not beating, it won't be very long before you're not breathing.
Well, you can miss a pulse very easily.
Yeah, but that's not the issue.
But that could be.
No, but what they want to say is that
they want to confirm
it's incidental,
that this is actually dead.
It's incidental that we're talking about the heartbeat. It's all about breathing.
Nobody disagrees about that.
I don't think you can prove
being
it.
Dead.
All right, anyway, there's a lot of ambiguity in the sources. There had to be, for there to be such a vikuach over this issue.
I think one of the issues here is that all of these are being discussed pre-mechanical, or any of the mechanical devices that we have,
right,
which
enables us to separate.
Enable them to separate, and I'm going to throw in some other muddy waters.
Who else?
Well, issues in neurologic patients like...
persistent misanthropy?
No. But if you... if you just want to define it as breathing, the patient that has the end-stage neurological disease, like Hawkins has, you know, who are on ventilators, but and
right,
and so that's
an argument that my black makes, and it's
you say ALS,
ALS, or any of many other entities. I don't want to.
Right.
It's the waters are very muddy.
Right. You can't get away with just saying it's all about breathing. You'll run into that trouble. So Dr. Starman was asked that question about, you know, in reference to polio patients or whatever. And he'll say, obviously, it has to have the appearance of death, meaning like the first part of the brain death criteria, you know, no cerebral cortical as well, and then we'll talk about it. What Rabbi Tendler will emphasize in this issue is he says like this, and he always goes back to that Rambam. He'll say, and this I really like about Rabbi Tendler, it's a very interesting approach. He says that you got to recognize three, this is a total biological statement by Rabbi Tendler. After all, he is a biologist. So he wants to emphasize that there's three levels. There's organismal death, organ death, and cellular death. In order to be dead, al-pidin, you only need the top one, organismal death. Everyone understand the difference between the three?
Yeah.
Organism, or the organism is the person, the entire person. He's made up of his organs. Each organ is an organ. With each organ is made up of cells. So he says the sequence of events is like this. The first thing to go
is the organ cell.
Is usually the organism before all the organs.
It's the cells that cause
the entity.
It can, but...
Well,
sequence
of events. He's entirely correct about the way he presents it.
Sometimes
the
organ
right. In other words, like it's going to be, let's say, one organ will kill you, right? If an organ's not working.
Right.
But we're talking about all the organs. So he goes like this. He says, the organism is the first to go, meaning the person is dead. That's when does that happen according to Rabbi Tendler? Brain death. As soon as that, the brain is out, or the brain is disconnected. Who does Rosh from the rest of the body? The organism is dead. You might have a beating heart. That organ's alive and well. And if the heart is beating well, you're going to keep all the other organs alive and well. He says, but let's say you didn't keep it alive. So what would happen is the organism would die, then each of the individual organs would die, and then the last thing to happen is lysis of the cells. The cells, cellular death is the last event, is what leads to the liquefaction. So he'll say, so brain death occurs, so we get liquefaction of the brain. Yeah, that really happens. And the rest of it follows suit if you allow it to happen. You could stop it if you put the guy in the respirator and you give him the right drugs.
Can I ask
But what counts up he did is organism.
Organism. Like, I don't know, liver failure or things like that before anything else happened. Like, doesn't always have to be that the person dies and then, like.
No, that's why I made a point to all the organs. In other words, the first thing, the primary event that you need, the only event you need for Alpidin to be considered dead, and it's not a Maiser Tzimma to take your heart out that's beating, is you need the organism to be dead. The entire entity, which is defined as the way the Rambam did in that Perush Mishnah. There's no more central control over the movements of the body. The heart no longer is controlled by the brain. Right? You can't accelerate your heart rate. It's like a transplant patient. Anyone here ever managed a transplant patient?
No.
If you did, one of the toughest parts of managing a transplant patient, a heart transplant, and I've gotten into this and I've learned my lesson the hard way. Time for a good story. We had a patient, and I don't know what got over me. I was a fellow, but I already knew better. But I just thought this day was not a. This is certainly not an egotistical story. This is a self-effacing story. So there I was. We were in on the floor with this transplant patient, and the patient, unrecognized by me, who was responsible for this patient, was getting into trouble. Now, it was hemodynamic trouble, which means this patient was dropping blood pressure and not doing well. I didn't have vital signs, but I was reassured. Somebody called me over to see the patient. I went to see the patient, and I was reassured that what they thought was happening was not happening. They thought that there was a tamponade occurring, that there was fluid around the heart, and he was dropping his output, and that he was not doing well. So what almost always happens early on in that kind of event, before the arrest, is tachycardia, right?
As well.
The heart will beat very fast to try and compensate. In other words, the heart's not able to beat out, pump out the blood, so instead it's going to try to beat more times per minute. So to me, the most reassuring thing would be is if the heart rate maintains itself normally. So that's usually when you're assessing for this type of complication, that's the first thing you think of, well, let's see what the heart rate is. So like an idiot, I go over to the transplant patient. Right? And I did that. Why is that idiotic? Because what is it that allows for a heart to beat faster in response to low blood pressure? What communication? The brainstem. Remember we were talking about those nerves, the autonomic nervous system. It's going to tell it. It's innervated, right? There's a nerve that will communicate with the heart. But in a transplant patient, could that possibly exist?
Nope.
Some people used to theorize that maybe they could reconnect, but it's never been shown. You're taking a heart out of someone else's body and putting it into this body. It has no connection to the nervous system. So there will be no tachycardic response. This is like the ABCs of taking care of a transplant patient. It's one of the first things you should think of. For some reason, I was off that. I don't know. Maybe I was up for 72 hours. I'll say. Whatever it was, I'm like telling everybody, no. I get called back in, and oh my God, now I'm seeing real signs of a decompensating patient. I'm going, oh my God, then it hit me. So we rushed, Baruch Hashem, happy, saved the guy. But it was a fatal mistake. So anyway, at the end of the day, you never want to be in that position. So Rabbi Tendler would say that that's a great example of Nishita, because he would tell me that if I have a heart beating in a body, right, not a transplant patient, this is a free transplant patient, my donor, and the heart is independent of the nervous system, the heart's going to beat on and on and on. Well, it can certainly beat. It just won't be innervated or controlled by the central nervous system. Therefore, that type of movement, Rabbi Tendler would say, is
nothing.
What would Rabbi Blyach say to this? You know, Rabbi Blyach would say, we're going to see in a minute what he says exactly, but I really think it's a good time to compare the two, this kind of case. Rabbi Blyach would say, now, the definition of death is not that. The definition of death is, in a nutshell, it's not the central control of the nervous system of the organs. It's the organ, any organ, having vital motion, right? Because Rabbi Blyach is going to have to say, I recognize that there's something called when you cut off someone's head, and those movements don't mean life. So Rabbi Blyach's not going to say, oh, any movement means life. He's not that stupid. He's going to say it's vital movement. What does vital movement mean?
Controlled by the central
nervous system. No, not like Rabbi Tendler. That's what you got to realize. Rabbi Tendler says controlled by the central nervous system. I mean, Blyach says no movement that results in vital activity. So
heart
a heart that's totally de-innervated from the brain, but it's circulating the blood throughout the body. That's vital movement of the heart. Of course, if you take the heart out of the body and it's just beating in a beaker, Rabbi Blyach would agree, yeah, that person's dead, right? That heart's not alive. But if the heart's in the body and it's circulating blood, that's vital motion. And I don't care if it's de-innervated. We don't pass in that way. Question?
I didn't exactly get what the Chasam Sofer is saying.
The problem with the Chasam Sofer is the Chasam Sofer makes two statements. And he seems to at first say that the sole definition of death from Chazal is bitul nishima, which means the irreversible cessation of breathing. That's what he says on one in one paragraph.
So he says
he mentions it alone.
Death is if you don't breathe.
He basically says, right. Chazal told us, he quotes Yuma. He quotes Yuma and he says, we see, it's all about breathing. But then later, in another statement, in the same tshuva, he brings in other motion and even pulse into the statement about what death is. So which one did he mean?
So really,
it's not Meduyuk at all, and the whole thing's confusing, and
so
anyone who brings it in is trying to just bring in more evidence. I don't think it really clearly supports either side.
So, Brother Blood doesn't care that, because I think we said last class that since the heart is an autonomous organ, was that Rabbi Tenner who said that that was.
No, Rabbi Tenner emphasized that the motion of the heart does not in any way mean that the person's alive. And his proof was that the heart will move even if it's outside the body.
Okay, so Rabbi Blood uses that and only says that if it's vital movement, if it's inside the body, if it's doing something useful for the body, even if it's an autonomous
life sustaining movement. Yeah.
Okay, so any other organ that's a vital.
Right. So really, the choices are limited. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
In other words, it's the heart, the brain, the lungs. Right. There are a varim shanasham tuliyam. There are only certain organs that the life is dependent on.
So what's his definition in the end? Like what's his final?
Well, it basically is, we're going to see how he develops it, but it's basically what I just said. It's if there's any vital motion left in the body, that person's alive.
How does he deal with
so
transplant?
Heart is done.
It's vital motion.
But the guy's alive. I'm sorry, the guy's...
It's vital motion. The heart, although it's de-innervated, right? He doesn't care about the tenderness definition. He says the fact that it's not attached to the brain doesn't mean anything.
No, so it's pretty sure that doesn't prove everything.
If anything, it's a riot. The fact that transplant people are walking around, right? But not really, because Rabbi Tamla says, don't say that. Ever say that to Rabbi Tamla. But Rabbi Tamla says, no, the person's brain is still controlling all these bodily functions.
It gets even messier.
Yeah, we've seen a minute.
Because
I want to see them in
some of these things get with the mechanical devices because of pacemakers, defibrillators.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a family episode recently, which a man, relative, my brother-in-law's brother, who had renal failure, was on dialysis,
right.
Had a pacemaker defibrillator in place, and had a stroke, a massive cerebral hemorrhage. But there was no question about it. And in fact, was recovering from his stroke, or recovering from his stroke, was able to blink and respond.
Right.
Okay, now his...
Alive by everybody.
Now his pacemaker battery is failing.
So the shaman is...
And
to replace
do you
it?
Replace it?
Yeah, that's our next topic.
And
that's
but
it.
This is all in it, or if it stops,
right. Do
I now immediately replace it?
That's the kind of decision we're going to make next
and
week.
And this is family 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, all right, we'll do that exact case.
Hmm?
We'll do that exact case. Remind me, bring that case in. We should be equipped to answer that, Sean.
Yeah, that's
I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer to answer it.
I think it is also.
But let's develop.
I think it is also, but I just, to let them appreciate.
We'll see how we feel about it. We'll see how we feel about it next week. We're going to do, that's the end of life decisions. That's one of them.
Just to clarify what says, that, so if someone's attached to a respirator and they're completely brain dead, he would say that heartbeat, even though it's artificial, is being powered by a machine, so it counts as vital movement.
The heartbeat is not being powered by a machine.
I mean, the breathing, which enables
heart. In other words, the brain is out of it,
dead.
But that heart is circulating blood throughout the rest of the body.
Right.
That's a vital motion.
Alive.
You take out that heart, you killed them.
Right.
No matter what your noble purpose is, Rabbi Blach will say you absolutely killed them. It's interesting. Rabbi Blach will say, it's different than Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter say that person might be dead, suffering. Rabbi Blach says that person is 100% alive. What's the nafkamina? Well, what's an immediate nafkamina for that patient between Rav Shechter and Rabbi Blach?
It's
that you have to you make a decision.
Wait.
No, everybody, suffix,
right, yeah.
Right? So not that, but another topic we once did. Yes. Does the Kohen have to leave the room? According to Rosh Hashanah, yes. Suffix is enough to get the Kohen out of the room. According to the Rebbe, like, hang it out. You guys are lying, no problem. All right. Now we're going to get to the real. We've been touching upon little bits and pieces, but let's now get a coherent feel for what they really say in their own words. So I want to run through their pieces with you, highlighting the essentials. So page 12. Chacham Tzvi, leave alone for now. It's not going to be that useful. Chacham Tzvi basically, I got to make sure that I give the test back. Maybe we'll talk to come. So,
yeah,
all right, let's do that. We'll stop now because I want to let's do this. On Wednesday, we're going to finish everything up. I'll tell you what we're going to do on Wednesday. Wednesday, we're going to run through. It would be nice if anyone could get a look at this on their own at the time. I really made it easy for you. Highlighting Rabbi Tendler Shita in his own words, followed by Rabbi Black Shita in his own words. And then the hard part will be. The hard part will be Dr. Steinberg's in Hebrew. I'll go through that with you in English. And these are the three presenters, I call them. They are the presenters of the Shitas. And then the last thing we'll look at is the post-kid. We'll see what they have to say. And then we're going to talk about the big question that I really must do with you. Is a big point of contention between everybody. Is however, whatever you decide at the end of the day, donation is murder or not murder, right? It's either life-saving or murder, depending on your shita, brain death. What about receiving? Rabbi Tendler will contend that it is the epitome of hypocrisy for a person to say you cannot donate and yet allow receiving. This is connected kol hafosim. So we're going to explore that issue. Okay. Now let's get back to this.
I'm
making it even more interesting. There's a difference in that psalm between Eretz Yisrael and anywhere else. I'll have to understand that. You're certainly not going to be promoting
LSD in the class. In the class. Rabbi Shapiro.